Yes, I understand. It must have been terrifying. So many unexplainable things have happened here.
Episode 18 was actually Alexis's... Explain who he was again. I feel like you say a lot of words, but I never am fully processing exactly how you know him. I know you know him from college, but... Okay.
So, something that's probably not surprising to a lot of people, because, well, maybe if you're listening to the podcast, I do enjoy to talk, and I enjoy talking to other people. Mostly to like listen to their story or like share little tidbits of mine. But so when I was in college, my freshman year, it was my freshman year, spring semester, I applied to work at the admissions office. And I became a student ambassador, which is like the school tour guide. One of the four guys, and Jaime, our guest today, he was like the admissions counselor in charge of the student workers. So you had students who worked like in the office to help the admissions counselors like with paperwork and folders and big events and stuff. And then you had tour guides who showed people around when they showed up. So Jaime was in charge of all the student workers. And so he was like my contact person for that job. It was like my first real job, I guess. I was babysat before that. And so he was the boss for that. And he did that my first, I think it was 2 years. Like Kim and I could not remember what year he left. I'm pretty sure he left at the end of my sophomore year. And we stayed in touch a little bit after that. But then, you know, it's also in a way strange because he left and then we just like were friends on social media and then we just kind of fell into just trying to like keep up with each other on social media. So he heard Chris and Gina Lingham's podcast and your Chris and Gina Lingham's podcast and then reached out to me about wanting to kind of share his story and talk to us and be on the podcast as well. So it's episode 18. We're here with Jaime. Pronounce your last name for me, Jaime.
You know how to say it. De Leon.
De Leon. Okay. So, well, we're fine. Usually this is Melissa's job, and now, because I'm the one that knows you, I'm doing your lovely introduction.
Pressure's on now.
Gotta turn this fan up. All right, this is episode 18. We're here with Jaime De Leon, who I know from college, from Fairleigh Dickinson University. I was a student ambassador, and Jaime was one of the admissions counselors at FDU and was in charge of the student ambassadors and student workers. So him and I for, I guess it was 2 years, I think, Jaime, my freshman and sophomore year before you moved on to other things. So him and I worked closely and he listened to our podcast episode with the Linghams and he reached out and we are now here with him. So welcome, Jaime.
Thank you. Welcome. Happy to be here.
Thanks for listening, for being a listener.
So thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. I am currently the director of admissions at Hudson Catholic Regional High School in Jersey City, New Jersey. I was actually born in Jersey City, grew up in Jersey City, and moved away for college and stayed in Worcester, Massachusetts for about 8 years before I moved back to New Jersey. I first met Lex, I don't even remember what year it is, whatever you say it is, that's the year. But however long we were together, that's how long we were together. But I spent many, many years working in colleges before making the switch to the high school side. Education has always been a passion of mine. That's part of the reason I reached out and thought, you know, this might be a good place to speak and to, you know, reach out to other educators. Having never been an actual teacher, I think I have a little bit of a different perspective. I've never been a classroom teacher or a classroom professor. I've been a student, you know, and I've been an administrator for 5 years now. So I think I have a different perspective on things. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm happy to be here. The first thing I want to do, Lex, I feel like I owe you an apology. And I've listened to not all of your podcasts, but a lot of them. And one of the things that struck out to me is that it's been a number of years, right, since we moved together. Here's what something that's always bothered me since whenever that was, if it was 2012 or 2011. You remember what your nickname was at FDU?
No.
Okay. I do. And I remember we called you Brownie.
I thought that wasn't me. That was Sarah.
First it was Sarah. Then it was you.
Ah.
And I'm glad you don't remember it, because it means you don't feel bad about it. But I certainly do. Because it was always Sarah was Brownie, and then you were Brownie number two.
Ah.
Right? And here we were, working at Fairleigh Dickinson. And I think Tracy got there at the same time as you, right? Because Tracy got there the year I left. But before Tracy got there, you know, I was probably the only person of color on the campus. I don't remember, you know, specifically if there were any others. Sharifa was around, but I think she was working on both campuses. Mm-hmm. But for those who have no idea what we're talking about, Fairleigh Dickinson has two campuses, one in Madison, New Jersey, the other in Teaneck, New Jersey. And I remember the day I got hired at Fairleigh Dickinson, which is before you got there. One of the guys from Teaneck, you know, made a joke to me about, you actually belong on Teaneck campus, you don't belong on this campus. And he was joking, but, you know, one of the themes I think has been of some of your podcasts is, you know, those jokes that we've all just kind of accepted and moved on, you know, years later, I think a lot of us regret. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing happened with Brownie, right, with Sarah.
Yeah.
You know, I know there was more to it than just the color of her skin. But it's also pretty clear to me that Sarah was only one of a handful of brown people on the campus. And so, you know, obviously that was not appropriate. And for me, I always felt bad because I let it happen. Mm. Right. And I never said anything. And I think, you know, I'm glad, like you said, you don't remember that. I do.
Yeah. But right? I appreciate that apology. And I think that's where we are right now, is like, we're all learning and growing. So like, I really didn't remember it. And I think that it was also like between you, me and Sarah, I think it felt as a way of like, we were connecting with each other and being this small population in a predominantly white or pretty much all white campus. And so I feel like if anything, I thought it was a way that I was more connecting with you and Sarah than being like pointed out. Probably knowing college me, but not that it makes it okay anyway, but
I think it's part of the problem, you know, and I don't know, we never really had a lot of conversations about this, but I feel like it's kind of like that with the N-word. Mm. You know, that black people think if we call ourselves that, then we're just, you know, we're have this own little secret group that nobody else knows about, but meanwhile other people are saying it and we're just like ignoring that, or you know, or whatever the thing is. So yeah. I sort of agree. I feel like I connected, you know, particularly with Sarah, because it definitely started with Sarah, mm-hmm. you know, and she would call herself that, you know, and I remember the first time being like, that's a little weird, but if that's what she wants to go by, you know, and it does seem like a term of endearment, maybe we should have her here, I don't know how she does, if that's a term of endearment, then, you know, I'm going to go along with it, but, you know, it's also obvious to me now, so many years later.
Right, more
to it than that.
Yes.
And it was probably my place to put an end to it, or at least to not continue it, I guess. You know,
right.
I've always felt bad about that. And as I said, the best part that I've heard is that you said you don't even remember it. So that's a good thing for me. But again, doesn't change that, you know.
No, and so I hope you can sleep tonight. I really don't think too much about it. I promise. All of my memories, I may honestly, of FDU is always remembering you in such a positive light. I remember you as like a confidant, like a great boss, a great leader while you were there. So
interesting that like we forget or you forget. It weighed so heavy on your heart, but then Alexis was like, yeah, I don't even really remember. It's so interesting, like how many things probably weigh heavy on our hearts that the other people are like, well, no, I didn't even think anything of it, but we beat ourselves up sometimes about things. But yeah.
Yeah.
These are the items that are shedding light maybe on everything. Maybe we're all reflecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, listening to some of the other podcasts, it kind of just, I guess, made me remember that again. I think part of it is, you know, we know each other, but we're not like talking every day or anything, right?
So, right.
You know, I think in the social media world, you feel like you're friends with people because you see their posts or you see what they're up to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we haven't spoken since then, right? I don't think.
No.
I think that's part of it too, you know. When you've got something that's on your mind, you never really get it off. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I think that's what's been nice about the podcast is people can use that as a way to talk through some things and let it out there. But I find it interesting that you brought up the use of the N-word because Melissa and I took some students to a field trip. We went and saw the movie Just Mercy. I guess it was last school year before everything shut down. And one of the topics came up about the use of the N-word amongst students of color, and then getting upset when like white classmates or peers use the word. And a lot of the students said that they were redefining the word. And so I've heard that a lot about students saying like, no, it doesn't mean that anymore. It means, you know, like, bro, like what's up? And they always are, I guess, shocked that I don't see it in that way. So I was wondering what like your response to that would be.
Yeah. I think along the same lines with you, I work in, like I said, in Jersey City, New Jersey. For those who aren't familiar, Jersey City is probably one of the most diverse cities you're going to come across, really anywhere. One of the things I like the most about Jersey City is how diverse it is. And one of the things that comes with that is that you have a lot of different types of people. So you have white kids and Spanish kids and black kids and Asian kids. And I think one of the things that's happened, particularly with the N-word, is that it's become such a part of people's culture that I feel like there are people who think they're cool enough to use the word, regardless of the color of their skin or their ethnicity. Right. So especially when you get around sports teams and things like that. So, you know, at my school, you know, you have guys on the basketball team and they're not all black. Right. Some of them are white and some of them are Hispanic and some of them are mixed and some of them are all, you know, all different kinds of things, which, again, is great. But on the other hand, I think they all think because they're part of this team or this group, they can all use the N-word. Mm. And most kids don't call each other out on it. You know, and again, I feel like this is leading to one of these situations where 10 years from now, one of these kids is going to look back and be like, I can't believe I used that word in this group. Hopefully, right? Hopefully nobody thinks, you know, they're allowed to use that word. Because I think there's just this cool factor to it, you know, and I think hip hop has a lot to do with it. You think, you know, that's always the line I hear. Well, I hear it in a song or I hear it in this or that or this movie or this book. That's part of the popular culture. So it's okay. And like I said, almost like I'm cool enough to use the word. I'm part of this group now. Mm. And so that's how I've always taken it. I don't think, I also don't think young kids really understand it anymore. And I think this is part of educating, you know, and part of what I wanted to talk about with the changing the names of the buildings and things, you know, I forget which one of the podcasts you guys were talking about that on, but there was one of the podcasts where you're talking about when you just change the name of something, you lose the opportunity to teach people. Right. And I think, you know, it's been a while since people really understood the actual meaning behind the N-word. And again, maybe that's just I'm working with teenagers. Your kids are 13 and 14. And as you guys are right in a high school setting, who really are young and really do need to learn, you know, the history behind that and why it's such a terrible thing. And it's not just something we picked out of thin air and said, don't say this word. Right. I mean, that there is a history behind it. And as I said, I think our kids today, they hear it so much that they're desensitized to it. They have no idea the real meaning behind it and they don't check each other, you know? So I was happy to see, you know, again, a lot of this has started because of George Floyd and some of the protests that happened. So I was happy to see that, there was a protest in Jersey City where one of the kids at a different school. I wish I could say it was at Hudson, but it was a different school. One of the young ladies actually got up on the mic and started speaking on it and saying, you know, some of you guys, you know, you're not Black, you know. I wish she had taken it one step further and said even Black kids really shouldn't use it. But, you know, I think progress comes slowly sometimes. If there's a realization that people are doing something wrong and we realize it and work to change it, I think that's a good thing.
Is it like that? There's this, it is hard, right? Because the kid, it's ingrained in their culture. And they, I don't think that they know the history behind it a lot of times. Do you think that it's our job as teachers to teach them the meaning behind it? Or are we crossing now into like this muddy water? Like, I think maybe some teachers are nervous to talk about it or nervous to talk about the history behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I could see why he would be, right? But it is an important part of history, I think, you know. And again, to me, these are all issues that come together, right? We have to talk about all parts of our history, right? We can't just, you know, start changing names and changing holidays, right? Coming up Monday, right? It's not Columbus Day anymore. It's Indigenous Peoples Day. But why, right? Do we understand why? Are we just taking Columbus's name out of it? Or are we actually educating people on, you know, what really happened and why we're calling it this new holiday? You know, a lot of this stuff, I think if we don't do the education behind it, are just empty gestures. And after I saw the story about my alma mater, and it made me upset because I never lived in that dorm or anything like that. But I know that all the people who lived in that dorm are going to call it the name when they live there, right? Then they don't, none of them go to Holy Cross anymore. They're all, you know, older people, right? 30, 40 years old, they're still going to remember Milady Hall. And they have no idea why they changed the name. They just heard, I guess this guy's racist. So we changed the name to whatever new name we called it. But there was never a discussion about it. They're not while they were there, right? So, you know, you got these old crusty alums who are still going to refer to it. You know, you can cut that out if you want. But you know exactly what I mean. Right, you got all your old 70-year-old guys who are going to still sit around there, you know, their golf courses, calling it Milady Hall. I remember when we lived in Milady, right? And they don't ever learn. Maybe the kids who are there now do, but by scrubbing the name, you completely lose the opportunity to have that conversation. So I think you have to do both, right? You have to teach, you know, why the N-word is bad at the same time as saying, you know, we didn't just pick a word out of thin air and say this is a bad word, right? There's a history and a meaning behind why it's a bad word, why, you know, and even maybe teach you why Black people think they can say it, you know? I think that's another level of conversation, but there's probably some education that needs to be had there too, other than, well, your skin is Black, you can say it.
So what is the history behind the hall that you're talking about where at your alma mater?
You know what? I honestly don't even know. I assume the guy was racist of some sort or owned slaves or something. And I gather there was, you know, some kind of movement to change the name of it. And so, you know, in order to seem like they're doing something, they changed the name. And I think that's what really strikes me as the crazy part is, first of all, you know, everybody's still going to refer to it, you know, as the whole. Going forward, certainly they won't, right? And that's a good thing, right? It's certainly progress. But I think a lot of these things come across to me anyway as just sort of being, you know, we want to do something, so let's do this. You know, I believe there are much more important some things that they could be doing, like educating, you know, the students there, you know, trying to reach out to more people of color to go to the school, right? There's no reason that they shouldn't be doing those things as well.
Yeah. Right. It's like just putting a Band-Aid on like a bleeding wound and thinking that that's going to make it better.
So it was at Holy Cross, right, Jaime?
Yes.
So I think it was saying Milady. Is that how you say that?
Yeah.
That he authorized the sale of 272 enslaved persons owned by Jesuits to pay off debts at Georgetown University. In the controversy that followed within the Jesuit community, he resigned his position and spent the next 5 years in a form of exile in Europe. But then he later found later returned to the U.S. to found the College of Holy Cross. And that, wow. Yeah.
So it's definitely a Band-Aid to, Melissa, your point, right? I mean, who would say if you got a bleeding wound, you put a Band-Aid on it, that's a bad thing, right? Yes, you definitely need a Band-Aid. But I think that's a really good analogy because you need a lot more than just the one Band-Aid.
Right.
You know, and sure, I'm not trying to say take the Band-Aid off, right? Definitely you should continue to do that, right? Generations going further, going into the future, will know the name. But, you know, how many times do you look at the name of your dorm and wonder who it's named after and do the research and then say, well, this is a bad guy. I feel bad about living in this dorm, you know?
Right.
I think that's sort of a day-to-day conversation. I think it's just sort of one of those things that, you know, you do it for the PR, unfortunately, not necessarily for the right reasons. And again, it is a Band-Aid. I don't want to sound like, it definitely needed to be done. And sure, it's a good thing that it was done, but, you know, it's not just Holy Cross, right? You know,
no.
Right?
I think a lot of places has jumped to, in, you know, the past few months have jumped to that conclusion of, okay, let's change the name, let's change this, let's change that. And what so many posts I've seen is like, okay, that's great, but that's like not what people are calling for. They're calling for like the actual system to be fixed, for that college to find ways to allow more diverse students or whatever the case may be into their population.
I would much rather Holy Cross, you know, take some of their money, some of their endowment money, and set up a program in Worcester. You know, we're educating kids and you know, bridging community relations. Worcester, Massachusetts, for those who don't know, again, is a very diverse city, kind of like Jersey City. Smaller than that, not quite as diverse, but certainly has, you know, a lot of different diverse populations. And very few kids from Worcester are going to Holy Cross. Primarily, they're not getting accepted at Holy Cross. They're not. The Worcester public schools haven't been strong enough, and there's only a handful of private schools, and even they aren't sending a ton of kids to Holy Cross. So, you know, they have right in their backyard a lot of diversity and a lot of different types of kids and different types of backgrounds that they could bring, you know, even if they're not admitting them as students, even if we're just having, you know, community relations boards and things like that. I'd much rather see, you know, particularly Holy Cross, but other organizations the same, you know. Silly things like changing the Aunt Jemima on the syrup, right? Whatever company that is. Yeah, you know, I get it. Yes, right. It's the Band-Aid. It's definitely bad, and we definitely shouldn't be doing that. But I'm sure that company, I don't even know who owns Aunt Jemima, but whoever owns that company probably has a lot more money than they know what to do with, and can probably set up some things in cities that need, you know, help, and can support schools that are underfunded, and, you know, all kinds of different things. And they're okay. So they're a pancake company or a breakfast company. How many urban schools are underfunded because they have to provide lunch and breakfast? Whereas, you know, the more wealthy schools, kids have breakfast at home, they can only spend money on lunch, right? I read about that kind of stuff all the time. So why not sponsor a lunch program, right? Keep your Aunt Jemima, give us the money, right? To support a free lunch program in the schools. So it doesn't have to come out of the school's budget, so they can use their budget on other things. To me, that would be much more, much better way to use their money and a much better way to have a similar impact, right? They want to do something. It's not going to solve racism overnight, but it will certainly go a long way towards helping that.
Right. 100%. We had the same exact conversation when the Aunt Jemima thing came out. Alexis and I were saying, like, I get why they're doing it, I guess, but the system is broken. There are fundamental problems wrong, and you changing Aunt Jemima isn't really fixing any of the system. It's just, again, putting a Band-Aid on it or looking good, like you said, for PR, when there are real things that you could be doing to change the system from the bottom up.
It's also the easy thing, right?
Yes.
And, you know, it's not easy to come up with a great idea for something else. Or, you know, like the lunch program or the breakfast program that I just spoke about, right? That's going to take a lot of time and energy and you know, a lot of
reaching out to others for ideas.
And, you know, figuring out who's going to get it and how and delivering all that kind of stuff. It's not easy. It's much easier to just say, give it on Jemima, right? So, I mean, I think that's part of it. And we as a community have to also demand that, you know, it goes beyond this, right? And if you think about it, like, if you make it, I can make it sound really silly, right? Some police officer decided to kneel on George Floyd's neck until he died, and Aunt Jemima's reaction was to change their pancake syrup, right? When you say it like that, it sounds really ridiculous, right? They didn't decide to do anything, you know, drastic. And Holy Cross's decision was, we're going to change the name of one of our buildings, right? Doesn't change away the fact that, yes, those are right decisions, that things that needed to be done. But when you look at it in that context, right, Black people all across America are protesting and rioting even because they're upset and they're angry at the system. And your response is, I'm going to change the name of this building. I'm going to change the name of this alley. I'm going to stop calling it the master bedroom. Right, those are all great things that need to happen too, but it makes it almost is like a free pass to not do anything else, and I feel like that's the part that we're missing in all of these discussions.
It's also the part that people are forgetting when they're protesting, or when it's not just protesting the police; it's protesting all of these things as well. It's protesting the fact that schools do have to pay for breakfast and lunch for underfunded or for more diverse districts and things like that. Like, these are the things also that are going into the Black Lives Matter movement. Alongside police brutality, there's also, like I said, just fundamental problems in the country that's also what we're fighting for too, mm-hmm. along with the police brutality, just basic things that maybe not everyone is thinking about because it's not affecting them, because they're not being affected by it.
Right. I'm just like, my wheels are just like turning. Like, I just,
because of Aunt Jemima,
the whole thing,
really. Was hungry all of a sudden.
I think about poor Uncle Ben too. Right. Yeah. But I think, like, it also, a friend of mine, a couple of people, like, reached out to me as all of this was unfolding, and they would always ask, like, okay, what should I read? Or, like, what should I watch? Like, do I have recommendations? And I was like, okay, I guess it depends, like, what problem do you want to look at? Like, again, like you were saying, mostly, like, Black Lives Matter isn't just, like, one thing. It's just an umbrella term for numerous systems that are broken and holding Black people back for so many years that they have to fight and overcome. So I'm always like, okay, well, if you were looking to watch something, you can watch 13th, and then that can help you, like, spread out from education or mass incarceration. Or you can read Stamped, which would cover, like, redlining and education and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, it depends on what area you're looking to look in, you know, and where, what are you looking to do, like, what
learn more about, yeah.
You, right. Because there's so many systems that are broken, and not just broken for Black people, but broken for anyone who is not in the majority white population. So how, looking at really at how all of those systems come together that make this Black Lives Matter umbrella term.
Yeah. I think this has, like, been the frustrating part for me with this virtual learning, because as I'm finding that in class, we're having the discussions where the kids are learning, like, my sixth period, for example, did not know that Thomas Jefferson slept with a slave that he owned. And therefore, along the line, that I showed them that picture of the ancestor where he recreated Thomas Jefferson's picture as his great, 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 great grandchild. And he is African-American. He's very clearly, like, has melanin. Mm-hmm. And they were like, wait, what? And I was like, guys, like, you haven't learned this? And I'm so frustrated that I'm not having these conversations with my whole class, because some aren't logging on to the Google Meet, or some are logging on to the Google Meet and definitely are not there. And it's just frustrating. And then we were talking about the 14th Amendment, because we were analyzing the Bill of Rights, and then it went beyond the Bill of Rights, because I was like, wait, I want to talk about the 14th Amendment too. And that, like, little clause in there that's saying, yeah, slavery's gone. Or the 13th Amendment, slavery's gone, but if you're in the prison system, like, you can be a slave. And then I was telling them that in the California wildfires, I was like, guys, a lot of the people that are fighting those California wildfires are the criminals from the prison, because they're allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. And they get paid $5 a week. and they're not trained firefighters. And they're like, what?
And then when they are released, they cannot continue to be a firefighter.
Right, but they just changed that. Now they're allowed. See, and this is the idea. Like, our voices, if we're loud enough, can be heard, because now they changed that. Right. And now, because people realize that this is wrong and that shouldn't be what's happening, if you're going to use these people to fight the wildfires, they should be able to then leave the prison system and have some sort of opportunity for them for something that they were having to do anyway. So because of, you know, people speaking up, that's changing. Mm-hmm. And to see little progress like that, I think is uplifting.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that's always my go-to when I get that question, you know, what should I read? What should I do? I have basically two go-tos. One is the movie Remember the Titans. You guys ever seen Remember the Titans? And second is the book The Hate U Give. And I'll tell you why. The Hate U Give, I think most people are at least a little bit familiar with it. But it's really funny. I read it this summer with my daughter. My daughter's 12 years old. And she read it and she thought it was about George Floyd. And I had to remind her that this thing was written like 4 or 5 years ago. This is way before George Floyd and a lot of others. Yeah. You know, I think it's even before Michael Brown, or it's right around the time of Michael Brown in St. Louis. So, you know, she's reading this and we're reading it together and she's thinking, oh, this is what happened with George Floyd just now. You know, and I have to remind her that, yes, it's what's happening, but, you know, this book actually wrote it a long time ago. And I think one of the things I like the most about that book is the main character, the girl Star. She talks a lot about having to fit into both worlds, her school world and her home world, and how, you know, when she says certain things, it's ghetto when she does it, but it's cool when the white kids do it, and vice versa, and going back and forth between those worlds. And I think too often we see and read and hear about things that only happen in one world. You know, it's either a black book or it's a white book, right? There are very few that show you how hard it is to live in both of the worlds. Okay, so that's one. Remember the Titans is the second one. There's one of my favorite scenes in that movie after they you know, it's about black football players and white football players integrating and coming together onto one team. And so the guys all get together and, you know, bond as a team, but the rest of the world hasn't. Right. So they're out celebrating after one of their games. And one of the white characters wants to take his black teammates into a restaurant. And the character Donald Faison actually says, you know, no, we're not allowed in that restaurant. And the white guy's like, what are you talking about? Of course we are. You know, we're the Titans. We're the big football team. They're going to let us in. And sure enough, they go to get let in and they're told no. And then Donald Faison's character, you know, gets really upset. And the other guy doesn't know why. And he's like, I don't understand what he's talking about. And he has to sit and explain to him, I just told you that they're not going to let me in. And what, you thought I was kidding? I think he said something like that. You think I was a joke? And then, you know, the big line in there is, you know, the guy says, I don't know. I didn't know. And Donald Faison says, what do you mean you didn't know? I just told you. You didn't want to know. Right. And I think that's part of the issue. Right. And that's why I always go to that book. You know, it's people know. They don't want to know, right? And they don't want to have that discussion. And they want to believe that this is all, you know, ancient history and this is all in the past and that nothing's going on. And you know, George Floyd was a criminal, so he deserved to die. And, you know, so many of the other ones, well, what did he do? Or you know, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, oh, he shot at us, so it was okay that we killed her. You know, no, you know, it's not. And I think people, again, we only live in one world or the other. We don't see it as, you know, Breonna Taylor was just asleep in her house. Like, even if it was the right house and they did have the right warrant, she deserved to die.
Right.
I mean, even if it was an accident, even if it was, you know, they got fired on, so they fired back. Okay. You know, one of my kids was brilliant. One of my kids, we were talking about it in school. Luckily, we are having some kids in school at Hudson Catholic. So we have some kids that was able to have a conversation with one of the girls. And she summed it up nicely. She said, you know, it's the same as if you're in a car accident. Like, you don't go driving around looking for an accident. But if you get in a car accident and you kill somebody, you go to jail. Right. And maybe it's not murder. And maybe it's, you know, they call it vehicular, whatever they call it. But there's a consequence for that. And you know, police need to have consequences. And I think that's really all we're saying. Right. Whatever it was that they thought George Floyd or Michael Brown or Philando Castillo or any of these other people were doing, they deserve to go home and they deserve to at least have their day in court. And anybody who wants to deny that, you know, to me, they don't want to know, right? They might know, but they don't want to know. And they want to avoid it, and they want to avoid that conversation. So those are my two go-tos. I mean, I'm sure there are a million others. I'm not trying to say others aren't good. But I try to go to those two, again, just because I want people to realize, you know, the difference in the two worlds, you know, and what it's like when you have to try to mix into that. Because I think that's the single factor that's really holding us back as a country, really, into moving forward, is that we're still, you know, in this world. It's either a Tyler Perry movie for black people, or it's a, you know, major motion picture for white people, right? There's no Michael B. Jordan in the white movie. Michael B. Jordan's Black Panther, right? He can't be Spider-Man, or he can't be Superman. He's got to only be Black Panther. So yeah, we're gonna put out Black Panther. And again, it's great that we put out Black Panther. Not trying to say it's a bad movie. It was a great movie, great role. Loved what it did. But why can't he be Superman? Why has Chris Evans got to be Superman? Or whatever. You know, maybe I'm mixing up
metaphors. Captain America.
Captain America, there you go. Why can't he be Captain America? Right? Why does Captain America have to be the white guy, you know, and he can only be in the Black Panther movie? You know, and the same is true for other ethnicities too, right? You have the Spanish movies and the Asian movies. Why does Crazy Rich Asians have to be the only movie the Asian people can be in? Why can't they be Captain America? Why can't they be, you know, in all these things? I think that's really where we still seem to be stuck on. Even after all these years and all this progress, we're still stuck on, you guys are in this world, everybody else is in this world.
Mm-hmm. It's scary to think, like, I know the answer to this, but like, these big movie companies, are they not putting more people of color or diversity into the major pictures because they're afraid that people won't go to the box office because they're seeing somebody that's of color playing that big part? Like, is that why they're being held back from putting these people of color in bigger motion pictures or in characters that are supposed to be white? Sure. And who's saying that they're supposed to be white? But is that why?
I think quite simply, yes. Right?
I think so too. I know the answer, but yeah. And that's something probably that people are avoiding recognizing, that is why. Right. That is the answer.
Right. And then you'll have, you know, white people complain that this is supposed to be a white character. And they'll say, well, no, because we created the character. But again, nobody wants to have this, because there was a princess. I don't know if you remember. There was supposed to be some Disney princess that I think they, in like the live action version, it was going to be like,
yeah, The Little Mermaid, and they,
right? And it wasn't going to be a white girl who's playing
it.
Yeah,
they cast it as a black female, and people were very upset about it.
And they said, well, the character's white, why are they trying to make her black? And I was like, no, it's a character, like, it can be whatever. Like, who wrote that, you know? And
course, The Little Mermaid's not real, guys. I hate to burst your bubble, but exactly. There's no mermaid that lives, right? In the sea.
And neither is Captain America, and neither is Superman, and neither is Wonder Woman, right? These are all characters. They could be anything.
Okay, I'm leaving because you guys really just ruined my day.
Yeah. But they were people who really reacted that way, right? Who said, oh, you know, you're just being PC, or, oh, you're just trying to appease these communities. You know, and you know, and why is that a bad thing? Why can't you be?
And it's not it's just being inclusive. Right. It's not even trying to appease one group. It's just trying to include another group that's been excluded. Yeah, that's it.
Trying to appease a group. I don't understand that. Why is that, you know, so offensive to people that, yes, I'm trying to appease a different group, you know?
Because I think that
because
means
it's power.
Finally not.
Yeah.
That their attention is going away. They're thinking their power, their influence is going away. I see it on Facebook all the time for people who are defending All Lives Matter or some crazy thing. It's because they're not understanding that, like, for once, this thing is not about them. For once, this thing is about somebody else and other group of people. And, like, I'm not out here trying to, like, take your sunshine. I'm just trying to get some of the sunshine and stop sitting and hiding in the shade. Like, and people are struggling to give up this life that they've known. And again, it's not like we're trying to change their life. We're just trying to be more a part of that life and a part of that world.
Right. I've been seeing like a quote that's like, stop trying to make a movement, be happy that you don't have a movement.
Right.
And
people are so quick to jump to defend themselves.
Well, they're the loudest ones, yeah.
Right, rather than sitting to listen. And it's sometimes you really just have to sit back and listen. You don't need to be a keyboard warrior on Facebook. You don't need to yell at your family at the dinner table. You just need to sit and listen to what people around you are trying to say.
Right. But that's hard when you've been able to voice your opinion for so long and been said, you're right, you're right. And now all of a sudden people are questioning that. It's hard. It's those people are not wanting to back down right away.
Again, I know this was on some of your other podcasts. You know, look at a person like me. I've always told people I identify as Black because Black and white are colors. So people look at me and they don't care if I'm Black or not. They just see a Black guy. Right. Mm-hmm. So I can tell people till I'm blue in the face, actually, no, I'm Hispanic. But, you know, again, people are going to look and they're going to say, no, you're Black. Especially, it doesn't help that I don't speak Spanish. But but besides from that, you know, I think people always look at you and they decide what you are. Right. And so I know a lot of other Latinos that are dark skinned like me, you know, identify the same way. Right. There's no hiding it. Right. People are going to look at you and you're Black because Black and white are just colors. So for me, fitting into the world has always been a little difficult, you know. I don't speak Spanish, so I don't really fit in the Spanish world, right? I can't sit, you know, at the Spanish table and converse as much as I'd like to. And the same time, you know, growing up, I was lucky enough to go to a predominantly white schools for college, for high school, for even graduate school. So it's always been a struggle for me personally. I'm not really sure where I'm going with this.
We're
just fitting into both worlds.
Yeah. Are you fully Hispanic, Jaime? Like, what is your ethnic?
How far back you want to go, right? So, right? So,
well, I guess you said that, like, you're Hispanic, but I guess, like, is that how you identify?
So
like,
my father was born in Panama, but his mother is Jamaican, and his father is also Panamanian. My mother is born in America, but she's Puerto Rican. Both her parents are Puerto Rican. So the dark skin side is from the Jamaican side of my dad's mother. I don't know if you remember, I have 100 siblings, right? There's 10 of them.
Yes.
Wow. All different shades, you know, so it's also kind of interesting just in our own family. You know, some of us are lighter skinned and fit more with what a Latino looks like. Some of them are darker like me who, you know, again, the world just looks and sees a Black person, right? They don't care. They're not looking at my name. They're not trying to figure out. You know, they just see a Black person.
But I think that's definitely always like kind of the difficulty of you don't feel Spanish enough to sit at the Spanish table. Or you don't feel Black enough to sit at the Black table, but you're clearly not white. So you're the token Black friend sitting at the white table, or you're not white. So why are you sitting at the white table? So you just find yourself kind of caught in the middle. And I think it is kind of that. Not like identity crisis, but identity crisis is to like, do I wish I had more opportunities or more with Black people or Black friends since I grew up in a predominantly white area and most of my friends are white. So then it's like, oh, do I wish I had more Black friends? Like, I don't know. Why can't I just have friends? And so
right.
I find myself in that like cycle and
why is it a category? Right.
Why does it matter? If I have really good friends that are having great friends for a long time or a short period of time, what does it matter how they identify themselves as long as they're a good friend to me?
And a lot of it goes to what people stereotypically think a Black person is going to look and act like.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you get a lot of, oh, you're an Oreo. And it's like, well, what does that mean? You know, and that means I'm acting white. And why am I acting white? What am I not doing that, you know, makes you think that I'm any less Black than anybody else that you know or have come across, right? And I think that's part of the whole dual world thing as well, right? You've got what I see on TV and movies and books and music, and that's what Black people look like. And then I come across someone like you and say, well, that's not what I saw in the movies or the TV because that's not real, right? You know, and I'm sure I'm not alone, right? There are millions of you know, Black and African American and Latino people, and people of all races right? Who are different than what you might expect. And I get that even as an adult, right? That's way past, you know, high school and, you know, even into, you know, some of the conversations you mentioned, Jake, who used to work at FDU, he, you know, used to say all the time, like that, I'm not what he expected. Yeah, right. I'm a black guy. And I would say, well, what is it you're expecting? You know, you know, and I was lucky that Jake was a great friend and we could have those discussions, mm-hmm. right? We had those discussions all the time, you know, and I would, you know, and I think we would challenge each other. But we need more of that, you know, mm-hmm. not less of it. Mm-hmm. So
I was actually reading an article the other day and it was talking about how people even like comment and talk to each other on social media. So it was like for females, like if you're commenting on a white friend's like post, you're like, oh my gosh, you look so beautiful, but then on like a black friend's post they're like writing like, yes queen, or like whatever it is that they're saying, and thinking that they have to like portray or like comment in a certain way. And it's like, why can't the black girl get the, oh my gosh, you're so beautiful as yeah. well? Why does it have to be like a queen or like whatever other yeah. term that they're using?
Why does everything have to be a category, right? I think that was Chris and Gina, right? Why is our relationship a category?
Yeah.
It really shouldn't be, right? It's just, it is, you know, it's a relationship just like any other. Why does who, and I think it was you was talking about Barbie dolls, right? Why does it have to characterize the Barbie dolls? It's just, right. you know, why does it have to be, there has to be a black Barbie doll and a white Barbie doll? Because it has to be, right? Because right. otherwise everybody sees Barbie doll and just thinks, oh, it's only white. So.
Yeah, my grandfather used to get mad at me about that because I had always picked the white Barbie doll off the shelf, and he yeah. said, why don't you ever want the black one? And I was like, I don't know, I just want this one. Yeah. And then for my youngest sister, he got like so frustrated by it that then when he bought all three of us American Girl dolls, and I had Samantha, the white blonde hair, blue eyed American Girl doll. My sister Kayla had Samantha, white brunette American Girl doll. My grandfather was like, I'm tired of buying these white dolls. So he got my sister Addie, the black American Girl doll. And he was like, finally. And that, but I was just like, I don't care. I just am trying to play. Like, I, you know, but then again, as a young black girl growing up in a predominantly white world, like those are the people that I saw and that I played with. So, you know, I guess maybe I just gravitated towards it in that way and I didn't think anything of it. But for him, right. very much like, why don't you ever want a black doll?
Right. Like, right.
Papa, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because he was seeing that he wanted you to take pride in like who you were and right. what you looked like. That was what his adult self was seeing. And yes. then your child self was just seeing, well, I don't know, everyone else is playing with white dolls, but
right, like I'm trying to play.
Right.
I think as a sort of a parting shot, one of the things I try to tell a lot of my friends when they ask me, you know, what can they do? I think it'd be as simple as, you know, reaching out and making friends of different races. And it seems, you know, a simple thing to say, but so many of my friends, you know, and I think we're all guilty of this, you're in your own little world, right? Especially now with COVID, you know, when you're literally in your own little world. You know, and this is one of the reasons I was pushing schools to back open. You know, the kids in my school that are super diverse, right? Imagine they didn't have that every day. Imagine they only interacted with the people in their house and in their immediate neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't come together and have conversations with people of different races, right? Imagine what kind of world that would be. Right. And I think, you know, a lot of my friends that are still in Massachusetts or other suburbs, right? They're living in a suburb on a block, most likely that is, you know, entirely of people that look like them. And you know, like I said, especially now, but, you know, even when they go back to school, right? Are they going to school with mostly other white kids? Are they going to, you know, dance lessons and baseball practices with mostly other white kids, right? Are you encouraging your kid to make friends with different races, right? That's the only way you're going to find out that, you know, all black people aren't criminals, and that, you know, all Asian people aren't, you know, super math geeks or whatever other stereotype you might have, right? The only way you're going to find that out is to meet those people, meet those families, and you're going to find that, you know, in the long run, your lives are better for it. You know, everybody's lives are better for it. And maybe you start to understand, Right. So even if you don't really want to know, at least you'll understand a little bit more about where we're coming from.
Well, thanks again, Jaime. This was phenomenal. Thank you.
Yes.